I ask you to please take your Bibles over to Exodus chapter 20 this morning. We'll begin in Exodus chapter 20 today. For those that are visiting today, you may be from the community or maybe just traveling during the summer. Thank you so much for choosing to come and to study from God's Word with us. We're going to be looking this morning as well as this evening at a lesson dealing with the Ten Commandments. It's not often we get the chance to do kind of a part one and part two, but we're able to do that today. And so I'm glad that we can spend some time here. I think sometimes we fall into the trap or make the mistake of jumping to the Ten Commandments and immediately telling people, oh, but that was back then. And there's this distinction between the New Testament and the Old Testament. Yes, that's important, but what we really need to see first for the Ten Commandments is that they were designed by God to create inner and external transformation in His people. They had been slaves in Egypt, and now He is forming them into a nation. And that is going to change the way that they connect with each other, and it's going to change how they behave and the things that they value. And so I'm really looking forward to the study that we have for this today. If we just list the Ten Commandments, right, we've got the first four. There's no other gods. There's no graven images. Don't take the Lord's name in vain. Observe the Sabbath. You see really quickly that the first four of these commandments all relate to God and how we honor Him and respect Him. And tonight, Lord willing, if we come back at 6, we'll look at the other 6. But commandment number 5 is a little bit of a bridge commandment, because we move from how we honor God and we go into not just all of society, but first the family and the love and the honor that is shown within the family. And then you get 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, right? No murder, adultery, stealing, lying, or coveting. These commandments are really here to change these people. And so they continue to have a lot of value for us. We want to see kind of how they function in God's overall scheme of redemption. So let's start reading in chapter 20 in verse 1. God spoke all of these words, saying, I am the Lord your God, who brought you out of the land of Egypt and out of the house of slavery. You shall have no other gods before me. You shall not make for yourself an idol or any likeness of what is in heaven above or on earth beneath or in the water under the earth. You shall not worship them or serve them, for I, the Lord your God, am a jealous God, visiting the iniquity of the fathers on the children, on the third and the fourth generation of those who hate me, but showing loving kindness to thousands, to those who love me and keep my commandments. You shall not take the name of the Lord your God in vain, for the Lord will not leave him unpunished who takes his name in vain. Remember the Sabbath day to keep it holy. 6 days you shall labor and do all of your work, but the seventh day is the Sabbath of the Lord your God. In it you shall not do any work, you or your son or your daughter, your male or your female servant, or your cattle, or your sojourner who stays with you. For in 6 days the Lord made the heavens and the earth, the sea and all that is in them, and rested on the seventh day. Therefore the Lord blessed the Sabbath day and made it holy. Honor your father and your mother, that your days may be prolonged in the land which the Lord your God gives you. You shall not commit murder. You shall not commit adultery. You shall not steal. You shall not bear false witness against your neighbor. You shall not covet your neighbor's house. You shall not covet your neighbor's wife, or his male servant, or his female servant, or his ox, or his donkeys, or anything that belongs to your neighbor. Now all the people perceived the thunder and the lightning flashes, the sound and the trumpet and the mountain smoking. And when the people saw it, they trembled and stood at a distance. They said to Moses, speak to us yourself and we will listen. But let not God speak to us, or we will die. Moses said to the people, do not be afraid, for God has come in order to test you, in order that the fear of Him may remain with you, that you may not sin. Let's walk through these Ten Commandments this morning, hopefully just laying a groundwork, some introductions, and then looking at the first four in the part one of our lesson. What should we appreciate when we look at a chapter like this? Well, I hope that you appreciate that these were a redeemed people. Did you catch in verse 1 and verse 2 that the commandments were not given to them back in Egypt, but because they had been brought out, because He is shaping and forming them into a holy people, they would have been prepared for the righteous living that the law is actually going to require. When we think about any of God's covenants or commandments, it's a reminder that He's the Redeemer. It's a reminder of His power and the privilege that it is to be His people. But next, I hope you would think about the written form. We know in other places that it comes on two tablets. And that's not like so many illustrations, five and five. It's like a contract. And each party of the contract gets a copy, right? So there's a copy for the people and there's a copy for God. Two tablets showing that they are entering this covenant. Not only do we get the written form, but there's this structure that how we relate to God is going to influence how we relate to family and society. They're not inverted. You don't just start with other people. We start with our connection and our reverence for God. But come with me to Romans 13. You probably have heard these things before if you've studied the Ten Commandments. Come to Romans 13. What I really hope to emphasize in the lessons today is that the Ten Commandments not only forbid things like don't commit adultery, don't, right? The Ten Commandments actually show us and point us towards positive qualities. Look at Romans chapter 13, verse 8. Owe nothing to anyone. Romans 13, 8. Owe nothing to anyone except to love one another, for he who loves his neighbor has fulfilled the law. For this, you shall not commit adultery, you shall not murder, you shall not steal, you shall not covet. If there is any other commandment, it's summed up in this saying, you shall love your neighbor as yourself. Love does no wrong to a neighbor. Therefore, love is the fulfillment of the law. I hope as you kind of follow along in the lesson today, you'll keep in mind the scope of the Ten Commandments. They are specifically given by God not only to forbid the negative, but to reinforce the value of those things that were good and right, to emphasize the positive. You know, when we tell our kids, hey, don't hit your brother, don't hit your sister, what are we saying with that? We're saying love your brother. We're saying love your sister. And these commands function this way. So keep that in mind as we go through the lesson. Secondly, think about the limited circumstances that these were initially given in. Go back to Exodus 19, just one chapter before. Exodus chapter 19, and look at verse 4 through 8. God says, you yourselves have seen what I did to the Egyptians, how I bore you on eagle's wings and brought you to myself. Verse 5 of 19. Now then, if you will indeed obey my voice and keep my covenant, then you shall be my own possession among all the peoples, for all of the earth is mine. Catch that phrase in verse 5. He knows that everything in creation belongs to him. But out of everything, they would be special. Verse 6. You shall be to me a kingdom of priests and a holy nation. These are words that you shall speak to the sons of Israel. So Moses came and he called the elders of the people and set before them all of these words which the Lord had commanded him. All the people answered together and said, all that the Lord has spoken we will do. And Moses brought back the words of the people to the Lord. They are going to be distinct. They're going to be set apart. This specific people is going to follow these laws. And it's going to be how God prepares through the whole scheme of redemption to send His Son into the world. Not only is it specific people, but these were temporary. You know, I have no objection to like the Ten Commandments being posted in public places, but they're not like the laws for all people for all time. They were given for the Israelites in the Middle East at that time. Jeremiah says, there's another covenant coming. Right? Hebrews tells us we have a better covenant with better promises in Jesus Christ. So what are the Ten Commandments doing? Well, they are creating, as verse 6 said, this kingdom of priests and holy nation. Now, does that mean that none of these principles apply to us? Of course not. You know that. So what do we sometimes say? Often we'll say, well, the Ten Commandments were given in the law of Moses, and that's part of the Old Testament. But really, all of them were just brought over into the New Testament. Because it's still wrong to kill, and it's still wrong to commit adultery, and it's still wrong to take the Lord's name in vain. They're all just brought over. Not exactly. I think it's much more appropriate for us to say they are all elevated. The Ten Commandments are great, but they functioned literally for this theocracy that existed in the Middle East. And Jesus elevates them. Jesus comes and says, there's more to it, obviously, than just murder, right? Don't hate your brother. Don't call him a fool. Don't even have that lust in your heart in the first place. All of them are being elevated. But the commandments themselves were originally given to this specific people for that limited time that they were living under the old covenant. And they had a purpose. Paul talks about this in Romans chapter 7. You can turn over there and read that if you like. Romans chapter 7, 7 through 13. He says, hey, I would not have known sin except the law said, thou shalt not covet. Have you ever had one of those friends that maybe in a big group, everything's okay, but if you get one-on-one, they're kind of like, hey, come on, let's do this. No one will ever know. We'll totally get away with it. I don't think we'll get caught. Come on, let's do this. And suddenly you realize like that person is not really your friend. That's the person that's always getting you in trouble. Paul makes the point about verse 11, 12, and 13 that sin looks so desirable. Sin looks so tempting. Sin is saying, come on, do this. He says, yeah, but the law showed us sin is not your friend. The law was good and righteous and holy. And it showed that we died. It showed that we became a slave to sin. The law had that purpose, and it wasn't to continually govern God's people. The new covenant would govern God's people today. And the new covenant includes these concepts as they have been elevated. If you've ever been to any of our classes on the Sermon on the Mount, what do we usually say about the Beatitudes? Right? That they show us the heart of a kingdom citizen. That the Beatitudes begin to speak to us about the humility and the purity that Jesus is looking for in His spiritual kingdom. Isn't that the way the Ten Commandments are functioning for this Old Testament kingdom? To really encapsulate the essence of what it meant to be an Israelite in Israel. That's the way that they are placed in the book. So let's understand them. Let's start with these first four commandments. Now, I want you to see what they all have in common. They all elevate God's worth. By making Him our one and only God, our one and only focus of worship, we are honoring God with our entire life, and nothing else is going to be honored that way. But not only are we honoring God with our life, we are honoring Him with our heart. We're not being drawn after the beast or the animals or the anything that you can make an idol of. No, our heart is devoted to God. And in the third commandment, when we don't take His name in vain, isn't God governing and regulating our speech? That the way we talk about God, it's still going to honor Him. And okay, like that means my behavior and my speech and my thinking. Okay, I get that. But and then God starts, messing with our calendar and messing with our time. And by messing with our calendar and messing with our time, He starts messing with our income. Because He's saying that even if you wanted to work on day seven, you can't. Now, for people that just come out of slavery and have been forced constantly to do difficult labor, you would think a day of rest would be, well, yes, Sabbath, I love it. But it's requiring more than rest. It's requiring God to truly be honored in every way that we can. Did you see how Romans 13 is saying, like all of the law is summarized with this love. These first four are summarized. The honor that God deserves because He alone is worthy of this level of honor. So let's consider the first commandment. You shall have no other gods before me. How are we going to keep Him in that position? How are we going to actually keep Him first? I think it begins with this worth, right? This value that we place upon our relationship with God. In Luke 14, when Jesus told us to count the cost of following Him, He said, I've got to come before your father, your mother, your brother, your sister, your own life. He had to be the most important person to us. That's what's happening here in Exodus chapter 20. God is just first. He's the most important, the greatest value. We treasure our relationship with God more than any other person or thing. For the Israelites, that had to be a concrete concept in their heart. They would only pray to Him. They would only worship Him. They would only offer sacrifices to Him. Because He wasn't just like a little bit holy or even like a medium amount of holy. Right? God was holy, holy, holy. The only one that could hold this kind of position. So He was first in worth and he was first in their devotion. As slaves, they knew what it was like for someone to have unrestricted ability to make a demand of them. Unrestricted ability to make a request of them. And if God will be their God, then he can ask of us anything. And we see that that's exactly what these commandments are doing, right? He asks of our time. He asks of our speech. He asks. Because he is first in our devotion. He is shown to be very powerful. We look at verse 2. I am the Lord your God who brought you out of the land of Egypt, out of the house of slavery. It's based on him as our Redeemer and Deliverer that we have confidence in how powerful he is and that he is working for our good. So why would we be devoted to anyone else? And then first in faith. Would you skip ahead to Psalm 20 with me? I just love this verse. Psalm 20 and verse 7. It's such a contrast to where they had been. Psalm 20, verse 7. Some will boast in chariots and some in horses, but we will boast in the name of the Lord our God. These Israelites had seen the horses and the chariots of Pharaoh's army perish and be washed away in the Red Sea. And they were not putting their confidence, their worth, their devotion, their faith in their military. Their faith was in God. We will boast in the Lord. That's the concept that the first commandment is driving home for these people. What about the second commandment? What does God say? You shall not make for yourself an idol. This is one of the commandments where it begins to come to the surface that we should not read the chapter as a 10-point checklist. Because look at the language associated with this commandment. Verse 4, you shall not make for yourself an idol or any likeness of what is in heaven above or on earth beneath or in the water under the earth. You shall not worship them or serve them, for I, the Lord your God, am a jealous God, visiting the iniquity of the fathers on the children on the third and fourth generation of those who hate me, but showing loving kindness to thousands, to those who love me and keep my commandments. Do you see how this elaboration on the commandment in verse 5 and verse 6 is saying, hey, I'm not like these lions or like whatever big powerful thing you could make an idol. I am like this. Don't think of me in terms of physical qualities. Think of me in terms of characteristics. I'm just. I'm loving. I'm forgiving. I'm powerful. I'm above. He's asking you, his people, think of me not in these physical terms. He's superior to all of them anyway. He doesn't want us to have in mind something that lessens him, but instead to truly know him. So he goes into this kind of biography in verse 5 and verse 6 of actually describing the God that we serve. And doesn't your heart just lift up a little bit when you get to verse 6? Showing loving kindness to thousands, to those who love me and keep my commandments. God's passionate nature comes across in this commandment. That those that hate him would be punished, but those who love him and obey him would receive his greatest blessings. Blessings that he can literally provide. Because this carved idol, this random statue, it's powerless. But he is the one that acts and acts with great passion. I think all of us that are Bible students understand that idolatry can come in a lot of forms. We're warned about idolatry in the form of covetousness, right? We're warned about idolatry even through our hypocrisy. We're warned about valuing the created over the Creator. So this is just that reminder, how am I thinking of God this morning? What am I associating with God? Because he wants us to actually know his character. Anytime we begin to embrace idolatry, whether it's in a physical form or just an emotional or mental form, anytime we start embracing idolatry, our behavior degrades. Our morality degrades. It inevitably gets lower and lower. But when God is our focus, he lifts us up to be holy as he is holy. What about the third commandment? Look at verse 7. I think we see two parts in verse 7. Do you know what they are? There's both the command and then something new, there's a consequence. The Lord will not leave him unpunished who takes his name in vain. We see an instance of this in Leviticus chapter 24, where there had been a man that I believe his father was not Jewish, but he had been out and he used the name of the Lord in vain. And they knew this command. They knew that there had to be a punishment. And so they go and they beseech the Lord, what is the punishment? And all of those who were witnesses, everyone who actually heard him use the name of the Lord in vain, had to come and place their hand on this man. And you can just imagine 5 or 6 people coming and putting their hand on his shoulder saying, no, this is the guy. And I heard it and I know it. And he did it. And after that, he was pointed out and recognized that he was stoned. There were extreme consequences for taking the Lord's name in vain, because he is supposed to be honored. Now, what's the big deal about that? Why a word? How could a word actually lead to the death of one of God's citizens? It's because of words that encapsulates. God's name represents his character, which he's just defined and described in verse 4, 5, and 6. And his reputation, his ability to actually be the Redeemer. How many times did Moses plead with God when the people had messed up and the people had sinned? And he would say, God, don't wipe them out, because if you wipe them out now, all the nations around are going to look and they're going to defame you. They're going to profane your name. And they're going to say, well, he brought them out, but he couldn't get the job done. He couldn't actually deliver them to that promised land. And they're going to speak poorly about God. God's name stands for his character and reputation. Just like the book of Ecclesiastes says that our name, our reputation, is more valuable than gold or silver. Certainly God's name is more valuable than gold or silver. So taking it in vain would include using it in meaningless manners, turning the name of God into a common or idle phrase instead of speaking about him as our Holy Father. Both the Old Testament and New Testament speak about attaching his name to oaths or vows. And Jesus says, stop, don't do that. Just let your yes be yes and your no be no. Speaking of God with disrespect instead of love. These are the things that would cause his name to be taken lightly or as if it was worthless, when truly he is the most worthy and the most holy. So what did I ask you to think about? I asked you to think, not only are some things forbidden, but that inevitably means you have to do the right things instead. So what's the right way to use God's name? Like, how are we supposed to figure that out? Where are we supposed to find that? Isn't it actually in the way Jesus uses the name of the Father? Think of his humble, loving prayers where he speaks to the Father. Think of the way all of the Bible writers use the name of God to speak about his glory and his majesty, that he's the King of Kings, that he's the only immortal, that he alone is light and love. Like, he is lifted up when his name is used throughout Scripture. Let that set the bar for us for how we will use God's name, giving him the highest honor. And then our fourth commandment, to remember the Sabbath and to keep it holy. Again, God elaborates on this commandment quite extensively. I love verse 7, that there are no loopholes. You can't just see a stranger like from out of town walking by and say, hey, I know it's the Sabbath and I can't technically move that couch, but would you pick it up and put it over there? Like, no, you can't do that. You know, you can't even just like accidentally leave your ox hooked up to it the day before and then let your ox pull it. No. Everyone had to rest on the Sabbath day. What does that say? Doesn't that say that the first 6 days are enough to get your work done? You know how Jesus talks about how each day has enough trouble of its own, right? That you can lean on God and not get caught in worry and anxiety because each day has enough trouble. He's saying this in this commandment. Hey, look, after 6 days, it's time for a break. And you don't need to cheat. You don't need to use this day. Like, just let that wait until next week. There's some regulation on their even concept of a work-life balance and a work-worship balance that he's establishing in this covenant. But not only is that really interesting in this regulation, but he goes on in verse 11 to just show us that how God will be worshipped is dictated by God. It's God who picks the day. He could have picked any day. He could have said, the day that I created the light, the very first day. Right? But he chose this day. And he chose to make it on a weekly basis. Could have been monthly, could have been annual. But no, he chose to make it on a weekly basis. And he directed people in the appropriate observance of the day and in the roles that he wanted each to have, from young to old. And it was going to be observed by all of his people. Do you see how those same concepts are not just carried over in the New Testament, but are elevated in the New Testament? That God picked a special day for the Israelite nation, and it was related to creation. But that today he has picked this special day, the first day of the week, related to his son's own resurrection, related to the preaching of the gospel, and actually, like, this day that we worship him on, it's special. And everything else can wait. This is the day that he comes first. He's got those kind of regulations for us. It's a day that was blessed by God. He mentions that at the end of verse 11. The Lord blessed the Sabbath day, and he made it holy. All four of these commandments emphasize God's holiness and his ability to instruct us to honor him with this life of holiness. So the first one, again, honor him in life because he's our first priority. The second command, know him accurately. Don't think of him like these created items. Know his true character and put him in your heart. The third command, let his name always be used to give him glory and praise, never flippantly or in a profane way. And the fourth command with our time, following his example of pause and rest. I hope this morning that this helps you reflect on God's holiness and how we can walk with him. And although this is not a lesson just designed to teach the plan of salvation, we would not conclude our service without reminding everyone that he's still looking for a holy people. And it's not going to be because we are perfect or flawless. It's going to be because his son died on the cross to wash our sins away. If you need this very morning to confess your faith in Jesus Christ and be buried with Christ in baptism, then we don't want you to leave without having the opportunity to do that. You can come up forward while we sing, or you can catch me or one of the other elders or whatever in the hallway. But you have the chance to be part of God's holy people. Think about that decision as we stand and as we sing.